And I want to say, as to the person, we don't know what homeowner, which homeowner shot at him. I guess they think that they did something wrong, which they did not. If somebody's breaking in your house, you're more than welcome to shoot them in Santa Rosa County. We prefer that you do, actually. So whoever that was, you're not in trouble. Come see us. We have a gun safety class we put on every other Saturday. And if you take that, you'll shoot a lot better, and hopefully you'll save taxpayers money. So, with that, questions?
Now, these were comments by Santa Rosa County Sheriff Bob Johnson a couple of years ago in the 2022 Santa Villa shooting with a guy who was a very long-time criminal with lots of prior arrests and warrants out for him and, you know, running into a home, fleeing and eluding, and a homeowner shot him. And you heard what he said. And we're talking about this before the break just a little bit and how, you know, kind of two reactions. One is laughter, go get him, hell yeah. And the other is, I don't know about all that. You know, that seems a bit much. And what might happen if you had a, you know, if you had a deputy get involved in a shooting and then somebody says, well, look, this is the culture that you're creating. Or, you know, you have a homeowner involved in a shooting, excessive use of force, or shot after the threat's no longer there, and all of these kinds of things. So I'm with Sheriff Johnson generally. I think I'm not with him 100% on this, but I am with him in heart because if a guy breaks into the home and, you know, they're threatening my kids, you know, I will shoot to stop and I will not hesitate to shoot to kill unless the threat stops. And if the guy is disarmed and no longer a threat, I mean, you have to shoot. You can't like go inspect him and be like, hey, pulse is still there. Good. Let's take care of him. No, that's murder. Before we go too much further on this, I want to bring Mike Wood in. He is the public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department. Mike, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, I just want to check, you know, I always like to check with law enforcement to make sure the things I'm saying are correct. You are allowed to shoot to stop until the threat is no longer present and a reasonable person is no longer fearing for themselves or for anybody else nearby. At that point, you have to stop shooting. Do I have it right?
You've got it right. Yes, sir.
And if you keep shooting at that point, when you're no longer reasonably afraid for life, limb, or, you know, relative's life or limb, you can face charges up to and including murder.
Well, that's possible. Every situation is different, and it all has to be looked at. Investigators will look at it from the perspective of the victim. If this person has never been involved in a violent encounter before, especially one in their home, they will do what they have to do to protect themselves and their family, hopefully. And I think the message that the sheriff was trying to convey there was that in a situation like that, you don't have time to think about whether you're right or you're wrong. He's making people understand that they're in your home, they're causing, that they are a threat to you. You do what you have to do and to eliminate that threat, and don't worry about being arrested. Let's worry about the threat at hand right now. And so I think that's what the message ultimately was.
Oh, and that's a great reminder, too, because that's exactly what happens is people see these stories about, you know, homeowner shoots, gets arrested. And you're like, oh, I don't know what I can do. As long as you're afraid, you can do what you need to do. And let's not hesitate, because hesitation is a bad thing in that case. So that's a great clarification. Things that we have going on in Pensacola this week, I think it has been a relatively low level of what we would call, you know, news-related or newsworthy stories, but you did have a pretty bad outcome of somebody making a bad decision with a motorcycle. Is that right?
Yeah, unfortunately, Pensacola PD officers were last Saturday night attempting to make a stop on a motorcycle. That motorcycle fled, and we're just not going to, you know, to chase a motorcycle is a very dangerous thing to do. We did not engage in any pursuit that evening, but he got on the interstate northbound and at the interstate at Davis Highway, lost control of the motorcycle and hit a concrete barrier and was killed. And, you know, we've seen this happen before with motorcycles, unfortunately, several times. And this is one of the reasons, or the reason why we simply just, it's just too dangerous to engage in a pursuit with them unless they're involved in a forcible felony.
So this is a case where it's not because of dangers to other people necessarily, but because motorcycles are so fast and so dangerous, engaging in a chase with them, unless, as you say, there's a forcible felony that you're trying to, you know, prevent or, you know, catch the perpetrator of, it's just too risky to them, basically. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And a lot of times we have the tag number. We can take care of this later on. But even if we don't, it's just something that's just simply not worth it.
You know, it reminds me of, I was talking to Chief Hawthorne from Gulf Breeze Police Department over the weekend, last weekend, and we aired that interview earlier this week, and he was talking about speeding on Three Mile Bridge and people going outrageously fast speeds, you know, over 100 miles an hour on Three Mile Bridge. Look, we all know the bridge was built for speed, and then they tell us to drive slow. It's not reasonable or fair, but it is the law. And he was saying, you know, that they are very actively enforcing the speed limit there. And you and I have talked about this a little bit before, marked and unmarked vehicles. Do you guys have incidents like that where people are going over 100? And how actively are you patrolling Three Mile Bridge?
Well, the first fatality since the new bridge came into existence was a motorcycle. I was on the bridge that night. There's a construction crew working that night, and the motorcycle was doing about 120 miles an hour when it lost control and hit the back of one of these construction vehicles that was working on the bridge, and it cost the rider his life. So it's already happened on that bridge, and we are, along with Gulf Breeze, working on the bridge day and night in marked, unmarked vehicles, motorcycles, watching the speed on that bridge, because you know, like, if you look at it, it's built a lot or just like the I-10 bridge, which has a higher speed limit. But the reason the speed limit is what it is because of the approaches on both ends. You have to have a certain distance to be able to go down in speed, and the three-mile bridge is just simply not long enough to maintain anything over 45 miles an hour for that distance. So that's why it's built like the I-10 bridge, but the speeds have to be slower simply because there's just not a long enough stretch there to do anything else.
I did want to get just kind of an update from you. We've had a couple of things that were kind of waiting on implementation. You and I have talked last week about the red light cameras. But what about the substation at Pensacola State College? That seemed like it was kind of a, hey, do a little bit of installation, knock down a few walls, put in some cabling, and we're good. But it's not open yet, right?
No, not yet. And, you know, and we're looking forward to that. I've always been told since I was a kid, good things come to those who wait, and that's going to happen as well. But, you know, with the IT issues that we've experienced, you know, just when we get close and something else happens to knock that back. And of course, they've got to prioritize that and get everything back up and running. And then concentrate back on projects such as the substation.
Yeah, that actually reminds me, was PPD operations or dispatch affected at all by the, I guess, still kind of ongoing security stuff with the city? It seems like you guys were mostly isolated from that. Is that right?
Well, we had some administrative numbers that had to be changed, and that's about the extent of it for us. There was no emergency communications that were affected.
Well, that's very good news. The other project we've kind of been waiting on is the new SWAT van, the new Bearcat, I think a Bearcat, if I'm not mistaken, to replace the old and really not great plumber's van that we kind of use right now. How close are we on that?
I don't have an exact date, and again, that's something that, you know, those type vehicles, those specialty vehicles, are a lot like ambulances and fire trucks. You order them, and they, you know, they're like a Whataburger. They're going to build them as they're ordered. You know, they're not going to have them sitting ahead of time and sitting in a lot and hoping somebody buys it, because the specifications are different on every vehicle. So once they're ordered with the specs that we want, then they begin to build that, and that unfortunately takes time, and there's a line. There's a lot of agencies that are doing the same thing, and it's a first-come, first-served basis sort of thing. So we're still waiting, and again, good things come to those who wait, and when that thing arrives, we're going to be sure to let everyone know.
Great. Very good. We always like to end with a did you know or a cop myth. Do you have one for me this week?
Yeah, and this has to do with traffic stops and officers ordering people from the vehicle, the driver and the passenger from the vehicle. And do you have to get out of the car when the officer says yes? And the answer to that question is yes, you do. And this comes from case law, and case law is what governs what officers can and cannot do. And the first one was involved a case, Pennsylvania versus Mims in 1977, and that's the case law regarding the driver. And then the decision was made, yes, the officer, if the stop is legal, then the officer has the right to ask the driver to exit the vehicle. And then came along in 1997, Maryland versus Wolfson, that addressed the passengers, everybody else in the car. Do the officers have the right to ask them to get out? And the decision was also made, yes, they do. As long as the stop was reasonable, it was legal, and the officers can articulate why they needed the occupants to exit the vehicle. So the short answer is yes, when the officers ask you to get out of the car, you must do that.
Okay, so that's the last thing you said. I just want to clarify. If the officer just walks up to your door and says, get out, and you say, can you tell me why, officer, they do have to articulate a reason, but if they articulate a reason, then you have to get out. If they want to then search the car, they would have to articulate a probable cause justification for searching the car on top of having explained why they want you to get out, or you can say no and decline until they secure a warrant. Do I have all of that correct?
Well, you don't. They don't. The officer does not have to tell them why at the moment. They just, when they order them out, they've got to get out. And the reason for that is the officer may see a weapon, or there's a lot of reasons that officer may have to get those people to exit the car. And if you tell them why, then that could make things worse. So,
got it.
When I say that they need to articulate it, that's later on a report or in court. The officer must be able to explain his actions, but not immediately on the scene. No, they don't have to do that.
Okay, so they do have to be able to articulate later in order to give justification for asking you to get out of the car, not to you, to your face at that moment before you get out. But I'm still right about the search part, right? That if they say, may I search your car, and you can say no, or you can say, can you tell me why you want to? And they do at that point have to articulate something, right?
Yeah, absolutely. They will ask for consent to search, and if the occupant says no, then the officer can wait and get a search warrant. But you know, that happens on when the dog alerts on the car,
right?
Sort of thing. So yeah, it gets into a whole new area at that point. But if the officer has a reason to believe that there's narcotics or something else in the vehicle, then we can get a search warrant.
And then somebody texts in a good follow up to this: do passengers in a traffic stop have to provide identification?
It depends again on what's going on. The driver has to, obviously, because of the driver's license, but the passengers, again, not so much. It depends on the situation and what the investigation's about.
Okay, unless there is a reason, and that's something that they would absolutely have to be able to articulate later, and possibly at the time, depending on the circumstances. Is that pretty much right?
Yeah, right. But yeah, the short answer overall is no on the passengers, but yes on the driver, on whoever's operating the vehicle.
Oh, okay. All right. So I was a little bit wrong in my lean on that. So no on the passengers, again, unless there's something else that would justify the need to get an ID from them. Very good. That's why I love talking to y'all. I always learn stuff, and I know our listeners learn stuff as well. Mike Wood, he is the public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department, and joins us every Thursday at this time. Mike, as always, thank you for the time. Thanks for what you do, keeping us safe, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you.